you will first hear Risa Greenberg, who starts singing at 2 minutes 48.
Thank you, Joanne. I'm going to be returning to the mode of presentation from this morning, looking at a case study. I'll also be invoking the concept of exploding the museum or self-implosion, as well as questions of audience and participation, and of course, trauma. I leave it to you to decide whether my case study is an issue of an open wound or a scar in the process of healing. The exhibition that I will be speaking about is Mirroring Evil, Nazi Imagery, Recent Art, which opened at the Jewish Museum in New York on March 17th of this year. Well before the exhibition opened, art critics and Holocaust survivors decided that the exhibition should not be taking place, and for the most part maintained that opinion after seeing the exhibition itself. Today, I would like to offer some interpretations of the negative reception of this exhibition, not so much to determine whether the exhibition is right or wrong, good or bad, but to suggest some reasons for understanding the vehemence of those who speak against it. I also want to expand the discussion in this conference to include the relationship of critical reception to museal production. But first, there are a few disclaimers and caveats. I was a member of the Scholars Advisory Committee for the exhibition during its initial stages. Because of my previous writings on trauma and the representation of the Holocaust in Jewish historical museums, I was hired as a consultant on strategies the museum could utilize to minimize the inevitable discomfort the exhibition would provoke in some Holocaust survivor communities. My official involvement with planning the exhibition ended in July 2000. I also wrote about earlier art controversies for the catalog, and on April the 11th, I moderated a public debate on the exhibition at the museum. It was only after seeing the exhibition again at that time that I decided to speak about it for this conference. I do have some apologies. First, I'm not sure quite what my position is, inside or outside. Maybe that doesn't matter after we've heard Irit's presentation, but I will say that I'm not sure that I have sufficient critical distance at this point. My second apology is that the installation slides from the Jewish Museum are not yet ready, and they would not let me photograph them on my own. So although the last part of my argument is very much predicated on the actual installation strategies, they will be verbally described, and you'll just all have to go and see the exhibition to test them out. I decided to speak on Mirroring Evil in this conference, honoring Judith Mastai, because Judith believed in exhibitions that educate, exhibitions that bring different communities together, exhibitions that allow for thinking outside the box, even if they are not popular or critical successes. Mirroring Evil, as you may have heard, is this kind of exhibition. It was Judith and Sue Malvern, as co-organizers of the 1997 Feminist Art and Art Histories Conference at Reading, who gave me my first opportunity to publicly present work on the aesthetics of trauma, representations of the Holocaust in Jewish historical museums. My apologies to those of you who thought you would be hearing a later version of that work by reading the abstract on the website. In a sense, you are hearing a version of that work. The content may be different, but I think the issues are very much related. To avoid confusion, then, I've retitled my presentation today, Trauma Mirrored, Mirroring Evil. To begin, I'll start with the first slide, which is not appearing.
Could we dim these lights that are like turning us into a Fort Marshall situation?
Okay, thank you.
It's this one.
Sorry, okay. This doesn't count in my time. To begin, a bit of information about the exhibition. Mirroring Evil consists of 19 works by 13 artists, some of whom are Jewish, all of whom are under the age of 40. The artists come from 8 countries, including Israel, the USA, and Poland. The premises of the exhibition, according to the curator, are 1, the Holocaust continues to play a major role in our lives, 2, younger generations have no direct experience of the Holocaust and know it only through images, 3, images of Nazis are pervasive and glamorized in our society, and 4, there is a generation of artists who use images of Nazis and the cool language of conceptual art to create work that raises questions about commercialization, play, and sexual fantasy in relation to the ways the Holocaust functions in Western society today. Every aspect of the exhibition has been criticized. The thesis of the exhibition, an exhibition which shows primarily perpetrators, not victims, has been castigated. The title of the exhibition has been picked apart, both the mirroring and the evil. The museum has been chastised. It never should have put on this exhibition. Sorry. The art has been denigrated. It is juvenile, or, as suggested yesterday, pornographic. The style of the art has been declared unworthy. It is late, 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 out of date conceptualism. Individual pieces, and they vary incredibly from reviewer to reviewer, have been vilified. The selection has been maligned. There are better artists. The extent of the didactic material has been disparaged and the exhibition accused of being overly framed. The curator, Norman Claybutt, and writers for the catalog, myself included, have been taken to task for, in the words of Ron Rosenbaum, the author of Explaining Hitler, and I'm using his words here, smothering the art, shackling it to a straitjacket of jargon, and substituting a simplistic moral relativism for engagement with the issues. Criticism from Holocaust survivors was expected. Some protested to the press and the museum before the exhibition opened. Others picketed for 1 hour on the day of the opening itself. One explanation for their dissension is that mirroring evil offers a different set of images than those previously codified as acceptable by Holocaust museums, Jewish museums, and previous art exhibitions about the Holocaust. Daring to suggest not all people image or imagine the Holocaust as a narrative of victimhood or a forum for mourning is, for them, unacceptable. Raising questions or concerns about what is called Shoah business, the commodification of the Holocaust, the continuing eroticism of fascism, and the construction of Jewish identity as inextricable from the Holocaust, equally so, even if these same issues have been aired in a number of recent books. Elie Wiesel, Auschwitz and Buchenwald survivor and Nobel laureate, called the exhibition a betrayal. Menachem Rosensaft, head of the International Network of Children of Holocaust Survivors, labeled it trivializing and a desecration. One of the main arguments brought by this contingent is the question of timing. The museum is accused of not respecting surviving survivors and their children, of unnecessarily opening the wounds of trauma, of inflicting additional pain, all the more so because it is a Jewish museum, one of their own, causing such grief. Timing is always a concern when confronting and working through trauma. For some, the sooner trauma is addressed, the better. For most, trauma is encountered layer by layer, unfolding over time, never completely healed, more or less worked through. There are those who believe it essential to tell and retell the narrative of their trauma. They build Holocaust museums and mount Holocaust exhibitions in an effort to bear witness and to confront inhumanity. They are tenacious in their belief that there is only one way to represent the Holocaust and its evils, perhaps too tenacious, for they disallow any alternatives and any doubt about the consequences of their vision. The museum's question, who can speak for the Holocaust, placed on one of the wall text panels and in advertisements for the exhibition, can be frightening to those who believe that no one but survivors can say anything meaningful about what happened. It's a very strange reformulation of the quarrel of the ancients and the moderns. Somewhat unexpectedly, the attacks were extraordinarily widespread from within the sophisticated New York art community. Peter Sheldahl, in his New Yorker review, The Hitler Show, maybe the Hitler Channel, called the exhibition trivial shock, dilettantish sadomasochism, solemn smut, and toxic narcissism. Michael Kimmelman, in his of the New York Times, weighed in both before and after the opening, intimating the exhibition was cheap and obvious, and declaring it disrespectful and condescending. He ends his March 15th review commenting on Alan Schechner's It's the Real Thing, self-portrait at Buchenwald of 1993. There, the artist inserts an image of himself holding a Coke can into the famous Margaret Bourke White photograph of concentration camp survivors. Kimmelman states, really, it's just another twist on Duchamp's painted mustache on the Mona Lisa, a work of mischievous irreverence, nothing original, with the psychological ante upped by connection to Hitler. Kimmelman dismisses Schechner's explanation of the work functioning in relation to issues of identity and identification. He refuses to acknowledge any commentary on concentration camp tourism and ignores how the formal morphing of what in fact is a web work, not a photograph, echoes the subtle changes over time that allow us to understand history differently. Art Spiegelman, creator of the 1992 Pulitzer Prize winning Mouse, also cites Duchamp as a negative source for work in the exhibition. He published a cartoon on the back page of the March 25th issue of The New Yorker. In the first five frames, Spiegelman portrays a skinhead thug wearing a sleeveless black undershirt with a skull at the sternum. The thug is in the act of painting a red swastika on a pale blue stone wall. The final frame shows the swastika wall exhibited as art on the white walls of Mirroring Evil, while the artist and admirers, drinks in hand, stand in front of it, and other viewers are reading the text panels. Please remember those large text panels. I don't have installation views, and I will refer to them later. Spiegelman's swipe refers to a number of works in the exhibition which use Duchamp as a source. One is Rudolf Herz's 1995 Soupzwang. Soupzwang is an installation of a room papered chessboard style with alternating portraits of Hitler and Duchamp, both photographed by Hoffmann 20 years apart. The work was created for the Kunstverein Ruhr in Essen, a space directly below Essen's Jewish Historical Museum. Herz conceived Soupzwang after his exhibition on Hoffmann and Hitler was cancelled in Berlin on Saarbrücken. The exhibition that was cancelled was an investigation of the role of photography in glamorizing Hitler. Herz's title Soupzwang refers to a chess term, wherever a player moves becomes compromised or dangerous. Showing Soupzwang inside a Jewish museum, not below it, but inside the Jewish museum, allows the enemies inside the door. Showing what seem to be neutral images of Hitler in a Jewish museum is taboo, the kind of art associated with Duchamp equally so. For the double project of post-Holocaust Jewish museums, understandably, has been recuperative and commemorative. Soupzwang in a Jewish museum can be seen as questioning both these premises. There are some handouts of the slide that I don't have. Spiegelman's cartoon is also a reference to Tom Sachs's 1998 Gift Gas Gift Set. in which battered tins of gas decorated with Tiffany, Hermes, and Chanel packaging are placed on a glass display shelf, framed in white and mounted on a wall. Sachs's irreverence may well be a caustic comment on Holocaust displays which incorporate aged cans of Cyclone B gas, displaying them as relics. That's the slide on the screen. Spiegelman's cartoons suggest that artists in the exhibition are louts who give no thought to what they do. Granted, Tom Sachs's comments in the March 10th New York Times Magazine interview about fashion, like fascism, being about loss of identity and the, quote, amazing German engineering and design of the death camps, unquote, are provocative. But I would suggest Spiegelman's response is reductive. The artists in this exhibition, with the possible exception of Sachs, who relishes his bad boy image, are not Spiegelman's louts or thugs. Spiegelman's rabid response to the exhibition is, in my opinion, too rapid and linked to another aspect of timing and trauma. Mirroring Evil is an exhibition about trauma that opened for viewing in a recently traumatized city. The traumas of September 11th, the futile attempts to recover survivors after the Twin Towers fell, Operation Enduring Freedom, suicide bombings in Israel, Operation Protective Wall, more visible Islamist strength and protest, and escalating institutionalized and individual acts of anti-Semitism throughout the world preclude a more balanced reception of art which examines our response to evil and mass murder in a not-so-different past and its relation to evil now. The timing of the exhibition, planned many years before, may have been too soon after the initial trauma. Often when anger is so strong, there is also fear and denial. Even if nothing in the exhibition overtly links it to current events, these events may well be behind the hysteria with which it is being received. The more vehement responses do not even attempt to offer alternative theories for why so much current art about the Holocaust is ironic and distanced. One exception is Leslie Cammie's article. Nor are there any insights offered into how artists might meaningfully portray the Holocaust now, aside from suggesting humor, and that was a contentious modality even for Roberto Benigni in his Oscar award-winning film, Life is Beautiful. Little is said about the culture wars or conservatism within Jewish communities, about how Mirroring Evil keeps the debates about the ethics of Holocaust representations alive and expands its participants in a time when many would prefer to forget or believe the Holocaust and its repercussions are behind them. One of these repercussions is the founding of the state of Israel. Right. Unfortunately, the innovations in presentation in Mirroring Evil get lost in debates about appropriateness of style and subject. Mirroring Evil is a hybrid exhibition using the visual vocabulary of two exhibition genres. I suspect this slippage is another element that contributes to the anger in the exhibition. Mirroring Evil combines the white walls, bright lighting, and uncluttered installation of the Museal Contemporary Art Exhibition with installation devices found in Holocaust museums. Norman Claybat, the curator, and Dan Kershaw, the designer, borrow a number of tropes from Holocaust museum installations as a genre. Very quickly, and I'll show you some images from the Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington. First, there is a dark, relatively empty entrance room large enough to hold groups that acts as a transition from the world outside and an introduction to what will follow. There are protective walls and warnings near potentially disturbing images or objects. These were erected near the Schechner work. There are the large vertical didactic panels rather than traditional square or horizontal labels throughout Mirroring Evil. There are also carefully constructed sight lines with oblique and sequential views. Variations in floor material and lighting to avoid fixation and fatigue. a very tight narrative structure to convey a clear message, and at the end of, this is not the end, and at the end of the exhibition in a Holocaust museum, there's usually an area with light, more space, witness interviews and videos, which are seen seated to allow for relief and reflection. Mirroring Evil's presentation strategy is theatrical as that of a Holocaust exhibition. It is a mise en scène in three parts: the initial context room, galleries of art, and then the viewer response video area. At times, because of the tight space and choreography, viewers are surrounded or confronted with images they would rather not see. The usual entrance and exit pattern to these galleries has been reversed, upending any preconceived habitual ideas visitors to the museum might have about the art in those that they might have seen in those galleries. I'm just finishing, Joanne. Within modernism, artists and curators have used the language of display to challenge conventional readings of art, sometimes in ways we approve, and sometimes, as with the Degenerate Art Exhibition of 1937, in ways that we do not. Duchamp's intervention in the Surrealist Exhibition of 1942, where he strung string from wall to wall, making the space practically impenetrable and reorienting the viewer's relationship to art, serves as a more positive example of transgressive display aesthetics and provides yet another inflection of a Duchampian genealogy for Mirroring Evil. Its syntax, like the Duchamp installation, signals that Mirroring Evil is not a disinterested exhibition. By mirroring the theatricality, the narrative impulses, the extensive use of text and pedagogic videos used in Holocaust museums, Mirroring Evil calls these devices into question, suggesting that the genre has failed as a deterrent to evil, prejudice, and mass murder. Mirroring Evil asks, how can an artist, how can a museum fulfill this function? The lack of a definitive answer may be another reason for the anger that Mirroring Evil has attracted. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Risa Greenberg.